This conference is being recorded.
Okay. Uh-huh. So welcome. This conference is being recorded. She always has such a pleasant voice. Welcome, you guys, to the Heart Start to Your Week call on Monday, March 24th, 2008. I'm really excited about today's call. I feel so privileged to have the guest speaker that we have here today. And that little beep beep that you just heard, if you're live on the call tonight, was someone muting their phone. So if you're listening live, press *6, and *6 will mute your line so that background noise will not disturb the other listeners while we're doing the introductory remarks. And then at a certain point, we will open up the call this evening for your comments, your questions, your own stories to share. And you'll want to unmute yourself at that time by pressing *6 again so that we can hear you. If you're listening to this call as an archived recording and you have comments or questions, you can contact us directly at Fiera with those by sending us an email, info@Fiera, F like fantastic, Y-E-R-A.com. Or you can also call us, and the number to connect to us directly is 310-581-1507. And so Fiera, what is Fiera? For those who are new to these calls, Fiera is first and foremost a made-up word that means feeling great. It's that feeling you get when you just feel in sync with life. And it turns out that not only does it feel good, but it's good for you. That researchers from an institute that has licensed Fiera to teach its technology and its research called HeartMath discovered that when you feel good, and feeling good doesn't just mean pleasure, it could also mean feelings of genuine care or genuine compassion or peacefulness or contentment or wild exuberance, right? Those feel-good feelings, which we refer to as heart feelings, have a unique impact on the heart, which is why we call them heart feelings. That feeling good creates an ordered pattern in the heart's signature. And that ordered pattern translates into system-wide order, harmony, in our bodies and minds, because the electrical systems of the body, whether it's the nervous system or the immune system, the hormones, even the way your brain works, fall into sync with the heart when it's conducting itself in a harmonious rhythm. Makes sense, right? Like the conductor of an orchestra. Now imagine if the conductor of an orchestra suddenly had a seizure or was tap dancing on stage instead of conducting the orchestra. Well, then the flute player, the banjo, the bass drum, and the violinist don't know what to do. And so they all start playing their own tune. And that's what stress is. Stress is when our internal systems desynchronize or disintegrate, if you will. And then we get mental chatter or static, shoulder tension, gut clenching. And you can reverse the negative effects of stress on your body and on your mind by learning how, in step-by-step, scientifically proven processes, to create this order in your heart rhythm. And as a matter of fact, you can see that in real time. There are biofeedback technologies that HeartMath has created which show you in real time whether your heart is in a relative state of desynchronization or order, thereby coaching you the way a mirror helps you fix your hair or your teeth or do your makeup or whatever, coaching you emotionally into a state of being that balances your heart rhythm and thereby helps you activate more of your brain that most people don't use. And in activating the more of your brain that most people don't use, you see things differently. You're able to perceive with all your sense perceptions, a different way of looking at things. This is what's meant by the metaphors, looking through the eyes of love. It's not just a nice song. It's a literal fact that your perceptions alter when they're happening inside a coherent you. It's the difference between looking at an event through a camera that's shaking or a camera that's stable, or listening to a radio that's got static on it versus listening to a radio with a clear antenna, the radio that's tuned. And so creating internal order through the heart is like tuning your station to be able to perceive life more clearly through the eyes of the heart, if you will. And it doesn't have to be just seeing, it's really perceiving. And so we have a tool that we teach in the Beginner Heart Math webinar. And the next one, by the way, is coming up on April 1st, starts. And that first night is always free. So I encourage you, if you're interested in learning more, because Heart Math has been doing this research for 20 years, and I've been teaching this material myself for almost 15. We're not going to be able to cover all the material there is to cover in an hour, right? This is like an appetizer. And a sweet hors d'oeuvre, or I like to think of it as a little chocolate truffle that gives you a taste of what's possible. And if you want more information, there are lots of ways to get that, and one of the ways is to participate in the beginner webinar. And again, the first night is always free, and there's always a link on our website, even if you're listening to this as a recording, where you can sign up to participate in the next free webinar. And you can find that at www.sierra.com to learn more. And there is a free webinar you can take on the homepage of our website as well. You can just click on the link right there and watch a two-hour webinar in real time if you want to see it as a recording versus participate live. So that's a way that you can learn more about this incredible research on the intelligence. There's a true brain in the heart. They've actually discovered a whole neurological system, nervous system with its own intrinsic neurotransmitters, a real brain in the heart. And that brain is communicating with the brain in our head all the time. And when we tune ourselves to that station, we see things differently and respond more effectively. And that turns out to be better for our health, our relationships, our performance on the job or in life, measurable improvements, market improvements to health and well-being, things that we even measure here at Fiera. We can test just by having you pee in a cup and spit in a tube. We can see what happens to your stress hormone levels when you start accessing this heart intelligence. They go down, right? And your DHEA or anti-aging hormone goes up. We can watch this happen without any drug intervention, just you being your own internal pharmacist by shifting your emotions and shifting your outlook. And this is why I've been so excited to bring our guests on tonight, because Brett Askinas, who was a very successful periodontist, and if you know anything about dentistry, you know that it's just like, I think of it as just like medical school. Brett, you'll fill us in, but, you know, it's not easy to become a dentist, let's put it that way. And so periodontistry is even more specialized. So it's a very highly skilled, highly educated role. And so Brett was in that field at the time that he was diagnosed with MS.
This is true.
And Brett, as I recall, when you first came to learn heart math from me, your goal was really to beat the MS. You wanted to turn it around, right, by lowering your stress hormone levels. And as I kind of watched your evolution over, you know, the course of time, and then we disconnected for a year or two and only recently reconnected and you shared your story with me, the thing that moved me so much, because I feel like it's at the heart of heart math, was the perception shift that I heard when we had our, you know, our follow-up phone tea about a month ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
I said, hey, I've just been thinking about you and wondering how you're doing and what's going on. I was so moved to hear the perception shift. What I would say is looking through the eyes of the heart now at your illness, but specifically at reaching a stage of using a wheelchair in that process, and how what looked, and we'll get more into the Brett's story and really hear it in his own words here in a minute, but the essence I want to convey for you who are listening, because this isn't just about, you know, bringing the power of the heart to multiple sclerosis, which was Brett's diagnosis, right, or to the challenge of, you know, being in a wheelchair and using that. This is about each one of us. Because we all face challenges and we all face our own handicaps. And whatever your own sense of weakness is inside, it's possible to leverage a new perception of that in which it could offer you a sense of strength, in which it could be a portal of greater value to enter into your life and the lives of others. And in my experience of looking at life through the eyes of the heart always sees and tries to tell you in every situation and is able to glean that value and apply it, bring it forth for oneself and others. And we'll just want to give you guys another example of what I'm saying, and then a moment of reflection so that this call for each person who's listening can have impact for you, that you're not just listening to two people talk about the heart, that this call brings you into direct contact with your own. So I was recently reading a good friend of mine who we've interviewed on this call before, Bonnie St. John, wrote a book called How Strong Women Pray.
Jeff, would you excuse me once? I have to go take care of something.
Yes, no problem, Brett. Just let me know when you're back.
I will do that. Thank you.
And so, and Brett will need to do that periodically because he has special needs for his body, so he's just going to let us know when he can be here and when he can't. And that won't be a problem for us at all. But I definitely recommend this book, by the way, How Strong Women Pray. By Bonnie St. John, and at some point I'm going to get her on a Heart Start call and we'll talk about the heart of prayer. One of the women that Bonnie interviews in her book is Kathy Lee Gifford, a singer, songwriter, actor, producer. She was most famous for her 15 years on the television talk show Live with Regis and Kathy Lee. And one of the things that she had done was license her name to a clothing line for Walmart stores. And you guys might remember this because it really hit the papers big when she was accused of instigating child labor to source her clothing line, right, in third world countries, the sweatshops for children. Now, she'd been an advocate for children her whole life. As a matter of fact, all of the profits from her clothing line, $7 million, were designated to open a home for AIDS and crack babies in the heart of New York City. So the whole thing was designed to protect children, not abuse them. And she was as shocked as everyone else when the news broke that the clothing line itself was made by children in sweatshops in Honduras. But she was blamed for this. Now, why am I bringing this up? Because, again, it gets to the question of we are all going to face life challenges. Stress is not life challenges. Whether it's coming down with a severe illness, like what Brett's going to talk about tonight, or being falsely accused of a major global crime, those are major life challenges. Or whether it's being cut off on the freeway, right?
I'm back, Shiva.
Okay, thanks, Brett. We will all face life challenges, but that's not what stress is. Stress is our reaction to those challenges, and the possibility is to respond instead from the heart. So here's what Kathy Lee Gifford did with this. First, she definitely experienced it as a stressor, right? She was just devastated by this. Now, in this case, in this story, she used prayer, and what I'm suggesting is prayer helped her tap into the intelligence of her heart. And you can learn how to do that from a scientific perspective. So whether you believe in a divine presence or not, the heart's intelligence has been measured by science. So it can facilitate your prayer if that's what's real for you. Or if you're like my dad, who is an atheist, he got interested in the heart because of the science that showed there was a brain there. And so you can learn how to tap either way the intelligence that's there and see a different perspective. And so what Kathy Lee Gifford did was she said, oh, what better way to highlight the issue of child labor around the world than to use this position that she was in? And so as she was able to shift from her own self-pity, why is this happening to me, to answering that question herself, this is happening to me because I'm a person with the visibility that can make a difference on this issue globally. So it catapulted her into Congress and into collaboration with President Clinton, where they changed national law about allowing product into the country that had been made by child labor. Literally, President Clinton said to her, you are the only person who is going to be able to make a change to this. That sweatshops had been a problem for hundreds of years, but until her name was in the papers, and that's what brought awareness to people around it. So she had to get off of her own vanity about it, like, what does this mean about me, and go, wow, look how I'm being used as I've always wanted to be used to benefit children, to bring awareness to the needs of children. And as soon as she got that perception shift, it's a change in how we look at things. And then she was on fire with passion and purpose. And that's what I see again and again and again, is people are able to find and tap into their own heart, is that at times the very things that challenge us the most become the hinge points and the leverage for our passion and our purpose to fuel our joy in life. So again, to bring it back to you, you the listener tonight, I want you to just take a moment right now and focus your attention on the area around your own heart. We've all come from different states, different time zones. Some people call in from different countries. Focus your attention on the area around your heart. Let your breath come in and out easily and naturally. And I'd like you to become aware of just one area in your life, one thing for you personally that feels like a failure or a handicap or a challenge. Or the threat of one. Like, if this thing were to happen, then I would be an ultimate failure. And all I want you to do is write that one thing down on a piece of paper, then fold it up. Put your attention back in the heart. And we're going to revisit this piece of paper at the end of the call and see if you feel differently about it. And actually, you know what? Open it up again and just take a moment and write down how you currently feel about this issue, meaning let's cover three categories. So this one area where you feel handicapped or at like a failure or a potential failure, what happens to your body? What happens to your emotions? And what happens to your thinking? when you focus on this area of failure for yourself. Now, chances are you kind of feel the heaviness on the line, right? We just invited all of you into a chaotic heart signature. So now all I want you to do is go ahead and fold up that piece of paper, put it to the side. And we'll give you a little window into what we teach in the beginner webinar. Refocus your attention on the area around your heart and just connect with someone or something you appreciate. Appreciation is one of the immediate windows into a coherent or ordered heart signature. It can be something simple, you know, like the fresh breeze outside, or some of you on the East Coast got your first sunlight this weekend. A long time. It's breathing simple appreciation or gratitude for something and letting that be the platform from which you listen to Brett here share his story. And then we'll come back to your own direct experience. So, Brett, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us. And I was, again, just profoundly moved by the attitude replacement or adjustment that I heard you make to the whole idea of a wheelchair.
Well, thank you, Chev. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you having me on this call tonight. You know, it's nice to be able to be in a position for many years now of, you know, feeling like you're having to do something and being very introverted of being able to actually come out and help others by sharing my story.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really a nice thing.
Yeah, I really get that, right? As a periodontist, you were in the office every day helping people, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And now what I was saying to you is that you get to help people just by who you are.
Well, you know, and that's a nice thing because I can feel that. And when I go places and I'm, you know, I try and project a certain image. Actually, I don't try and project really anything other than just feeling good. I just feel good, and that in itself projects to all those around me. And it's just such a blessing because, you know, before, you know, if you're all in your head and people are you don't even recognize things are going on around you. You're just in your head. You're asking questions, and you know, and it's like, you know, there was a word that you mentioned before that just struck me, and it struck me this way for the first time when you were talking about this, about as far as paying attention to the heart, and it was the word attention. Because most of the time, we're so busy in our heads, we're not paying attention to anything other than ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very freeing when you're able to take that attention and place it directly on the heart and do something good for you. Because ultimately, you're going to do something good for others.
Mm-hmm. So beautifully said. So beautifully said, and such a great example of how I've heard you share that your disease has really been a value to you, even though I know you say, right, if it wouldn't be your preference, right? You wouldn't choose to get sick. You'd love to have this lesson on the golf course instead. But to really move from, you know, when you were a periodontist, you were in action serving people, but you were so type A when I met you, right?
You were not just any more type A.
Duh, 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 like hammer to the nail every moment, right?
Well, I was working hard to try and get better, and if I didn't work really hard, then there was no way I was going to get better. At least that was my thinking at the time.
That was the thinking, right?
Thinking, all thinking.
And how did that work out for you?
No feeling, all thinking.
Yeah.
Not very well.
And so now, so beautiful, it's like it almost took the experience of like pinning you into a wheelchair and saying, look, just stop a second. And you're going to find out that who you are is valuable. You don't have to do anything to prove it.
You know, that's unquestionably the case. And, you know, unfortunately, it took a, you know, debilitating illness to get me to realize things. But, you know, I've come to the determination that, things happen for a reason, and you can either do with them what you will. You know, you can do with them what you will, but you can either make good or not make good of it.
Mm.
You know, you get your choice. Free will. You know, we have free will.
Now, so many things talk about that choice, right? And yet, what I'd like to know, because we all know that conceptually, how did it become actual for you? Not just a Pollyanna idea, but a real experience.
Oof. Trial and error. Because I recognized in my... in my dealings with the MS, I tried to go through it very methodically, and there was nothing I'd ever done that I'd ever really failed at. I mean, I'd always been able to succeed in wherever I put my mind. And I don't say that in a conceited manner. I say that, you know, just simply as it was. If I couldn't do it, I just simply worked harder.
Mm.
You know, that's it. And this was one aspect that hard work was not going to do it.
No, because you needed
heart
work instead, right?
The hard work was recognizing that I needed to get out of my head
mm.
and get into feel.
Mm.
And once I was able to do that, and that was hard for me, but once I was able to do that, and I'm still, you know, in the process of doing it, things changed fairly dramatically
mm.
in my perception.
So tell us a little bit about that journey, where you started with it, what the perception shifts were, and where you're at with it now.
Okay, well, let me, you know, go back and tell my story a little bit here. As I'd written it. About 15 years ago, during a particularly stressful time in my life, going through a very bad marriage at the time, I went out running to blow off some steam. After about a mile, I noticed a pretty unusual tightness in my solar plexus, which didn't appear to be relenting anytime soon. I got concerned. As an athlete for most of my life, I felt like I had a pretty good awareness of my physical state at all times. I went to the doctor. He told me it was just stress, but I should find a way to release it. I was puzzled since that's what I thought that I was doing in the first place. Apparently, it wasn't working. My next visit was to the neurologist, who referred me to a neurosurgeon. Tests were done, and it was determined that they didn't know what was wrong. But I had noticed that my left leg had become numb and tight. It felt like I was wearing a large restrictive knee brace. I also noticed that my balance was very, very much off. The neurosurgeon suggested that I might have a disc problem, but after those were ruled out, he mentioned in an offhand manner that the MRI could be demonstrating the very, very early signs of MS. I chuckled at this immediately and immediately put it out of my mind. I went on with my life. A few years later, my symptoms improved greatly when I got divorced, but started coming back again a couple of years hence, in the way of numbness and tightness in my legs, fatigue, reduced coordination while standing for long stretches. I went for more MRIs and other neurological tests and was diagnosed with possible MS, then probable MS, and then finally definitive MS, all over about a 3-year span. This was a new and daunting challenge for me. I was going to beat this by doing whatever it took. I had always, you know, basically had success with whatever challenge that I took head on. I thought this would be no different.
So that's where I just want to interject here, right?
Yeah, sure.
This is what we're talking about, that type A kind of drive, right?
Mm-hmm.
That just seemed like, okay, well, this is the that always worked. I'm going to work harder and work harder and work harder. And finally, you got tossed something where your old means of success wasn't working. And if you stay inside that old paradigm, it can feel frustrating. Unless you can start to get the perception shift of excitement, like, oh, if the old way of working isn't working,
well,
maybe I'm going to get to learn something new,
it
right?
It was the only way I knew.
Right, but this is what's possible for all the listeners, is if that old way that you know is no longer working, that's good news, because it means you get to go on an adventure. You get to find out something you didn't know before. You get to do things in a way you didn't know they could be done before. And there's a step-by-step proven way to access that, so you don't have to feel like you're thrown into the ocean without a life raft or tossed into the desert without a compass, right?
Mm-hmm.
The heart tools can provide that, right? But at this stage, you basically had a hammer. It worked on all your nails, So you can't figure out why it's not working so well on your thumb.
True.
All right. Go ahead, Brett. I didn't want to interrupt you, but I just it's so classic for not just, you know, meeting a challenging illness, but for all the challenges that people are meeting in our modern lifestyle, right? Whether it's
just like you say, if you recognize it as an opportunity, you know, then you can do something with it.
Yeah.
If you recognize it as a barricade, then you know you'll deal with that a little differently as well.
Yeah. Well said.
Anyway, so after you know trying to recognize that I would try and deal with this head on, I started eating and drinking more healthy than usual. I'd always been pretty healthy and stopped drinking alcohol entirely. I was more of a casual drinker, but I decided, you know, might as well just go ahead and stop this altogether. I was also going to indulge my one real avocation that I was passionate about, golf. I love to play golf. The more the better. I knew by walking the course I would be able to beat the disease. I never took a court. I would play 3 or 4 times a week, sometimes twice on a weekend. Lots of miles were logged on the course. Whenever a playing companion suggested we ride, I respectfully declined and said to myself, as long as I can walk, I will walk. I would often swim laps in between in the club pool between rounds, reducing my core body temperature and giving me a more complete workout. I was not going to be debilitated by this physical condition. No way, no how.
Again, you can hear all the control in it, right?
Oh, yeah. I was not giving up to anything. I was still feeling like this is something that I can beat, and I'm going to do it. So at the time, I was taking meds that were designed to slow the progress of the disease, but that didn't work well enough for my taste, so I made a conscious decision to seek alternative means of healing. So I followed my heart and my intuition that led me along the path of healing.
Which, of course, is how we met.
That is how we met, right? Because I knew when I came to you that I needed to find a way to get out of my head to be able to get better. Mm-hmm. That's what led me to.
And what was that inner knowing? What was the first glimpse you had that you knew you needed to get out of your head?
Well, you know, actually, it had occurred many years ago. I was probably about 12 years old, and I heard somebody referred to as happy-go-lucky. And I'd always thought, I said, you know, that sounds really nice. And I knew, I was like, well, you know, that's, and I looked it up and saw what happy-go-lucky meant and said, well, that's the last thing I am. But it sounds like a nice idea.
Oh, wow.
And I had a golden retriever at the time. You know, that was my first dog. I was like 12 or 13. And this dog was happy-go-lucky.
Aww.
And I knew that if I aspired to be more like the way this dog goes through life, the life would be great and it would be easier. And I just knew that intrinsically, although I knew that I had to keep my nose to the grindstone in order to get ahead and succeed.
Now you hear the difference in his voice, the two things he's saying. It's such a classic expression of what we would call head and heart, but it's not really the head in battle with the heart at all. It's really just the fractured, compartmentalized self versus the whole self, right?
Yeah.
And you can just hear the total difference in intonation. So there's this one facet of you that's being called to live in this happy-go-lucky place that you see your dog embodying, and another voice in you that says, nose to the grindstone.
Right.
And that voice went out for a long time, right? And I'm certain that people listening, I know I can certainly hear myself in you, you know? And the conflict between those places and the encouraging news I just want to extend to all of you is that there doesn't have to be a conflict between those voices. That in fact, living from the heart, we've proven, and HeartMath has data from corporations even, increases our efficiency and our productivity.
Hmm.
That nose to the grindstone doesn't get the job done as well as the heart. So we don't have to battle ourselves. We can, in a sense, have it all. I love that story. Thank you, Rhett. Okay, keep going.
Okay, so in order, you know, one of the things intuitively that I started listening to people around me and just started saying, okay, I'm going to follow my intuition as far as what I should do. So I traveled to Brazil several times a year for healing, and I learned 4 important lessons right away. One was to trust your intuition implicitly. That was more or less kind of reinforcement of that concept. 2, there are no coincidences. 3, Everything happens for a reason, whether we like it or not. And four, ultimately, we have no control over anything of real importance. What we do have control over is the way we react to things. These concepts, particularly the last one, were key to my later perceptions. As my trips to Brazil and other healing places became more frequent, my ability to maintain the strength in my legs and walk long distances was dwindling. It was suggested on several occasions that I use a wheelchair, but my answer was always a defiant no. I believed that by getting in a wheelchair, it was the ultimate sign of defeat, and I would not be defeated. I would not be a failure. I believed that once I got in one, it would be a prison from which I'd never escape. I comforted myself with some statistics that I had read, claiming that only 30% of those with MS would ever be relegated to a wheelchair during their lives. I had always been ahead of the curve, so, of course, I was in that other 70%. I just had to be. Nothing else made any sense to me. Nothing. Finally, on one trip through Miami, I relented and agreed to let them push me around in a wheelchair. I was very bummed out. I remember being about as low as you could get, which was very unusual for me since I'd usually driven and focused. So there I sat, waiting for my ticket to count at the ticket counter in Miami International Airport, and was on the verge of crying. While thinking to myself that it just could not get any worse than this. Staring at the ground, when a shiny penny caught my eye. It was heads up, and I knew it was for me, so I picked it up. I also knew the date would be significant, and I didn't know why. It was 1993, the year that I first had symptoms, 11 years earlier. I put the penny in my pocket and recognized that I was loved and protected. Fear was becoming a thing of the past. And again, that love and protection came from inside. It came from feeling. It came from being connection. And that was what the great thing that was just overwhelming. It was just the connection with everyone around me. It just, you know, from being so focused on a spot on the ground to just feeling completely wide open to everything around me and just being connected to it was very, very compelling.
Mm.
It was a very good moment.
Mm.
Okay. I continued my healing journeys to Brazil, Canada, Germany, and Florida. They were always instructive and fun, but I consider them business trips. Over time, I came to realize that you experience what you resist. I had such an overwhelming desire to not be in a wheelchair that it eventuated as a worse fear. About a year ago, I started using a wheelchair for a conference I attended, and it made my life a whole lot easier. I never used one at home, and I was pretty much a hermit. But I used one away from home. Eventually, I started really enjoying using the wheelchair. For me, it was a way to get from here to there and nothing more, a way to make the workings of my life easier without exhausting me so I had energy for other things. At my third conference in a wheelchair, I found that my arms and shoulders were getting a great workout and getting nicely toned. Since I hadn't been able to swim or walk well for over 4 years, this was quite exciting for me as a form of exercise. It also allowed me to do more social things with people, which I suppose is the idea if you're going to do social things.
Well, that's something, Sue, that just I find so moving. It's like when, you know, the very thing that you thought would be a prison for you became a key out of your prison.
That's exactly right. It was just my perception and entirely my perception.
Oh, it just gives me chills. I mean, because this is true for each one of us, you guys listening. Whatever you think is your prison, it's not. It's your perception.
That's true, regardless, just like you say.
Yeah.
Regardless of whatever problems you perceive that you have, they can either be problems or they can be, lessons.
And this is why the third tool we teach, as soon as you've got, like, the basic heart math science under your belt, we teach you the perception shift tool. So you can start to take charge of your perceptions and set yourself free. So beautiful. Yeah, please keep going, Brett.
I've also gotten a wheelchair to use for exercise at home about 4 months ago. I take my dog for walks and have actually met some of my neighbors who didn't know me from Adam before. I still walk with a cane and use walls and counters to get around the house, but I'm no longer limited by being too stubborn to use a wheelchair when I need it. I figured that I might as well enjoy it since I won't be using it forever. I'll use it for as long as I need to and be thankful for the experience. I mean, how many people can say they got to use a wheelchair for a period of time in their lives? I mean, if I was to tell you I would think that, even as much as 2 years ago, I would tell you you're crazy. Another thing about being in a wheelchair is that, by and large, people are really nice to you. They go out of their way to be helpful. I am very appreciative of this, but it also makes me a little sad. I really wish that that people would treat each other the way that they treat those in wheelchairs all the time. I've seen people scowl at each other and then immediately be as nice as they can be to someone in a chair. I'm thinking, you know, don't be nice to me. Be nice to that guy over there. He's having a much worse day than I am.
Well, just think, though, you're like this ongoing source of coherence and heart feeling for people all around you, right? Because they just look at you and it opens up their hearts, right? They get to experience their own compassion just because you are who you are.
I get to experience their compassion as well. I just see it.
Yeah.
It's like a spigot that's just been opened up.
Ugh, isn't that stunning, right? Here, instead of like having to do this exacting procedure inside somebody's mouth where, you know, you're sweating bullets, all you have to do is sit there and you open people's hearts and you're good for them. You reduce their aging process.
Oh, I mean, to be honest, I never sweated bullets. I mean, that was very relaxing for me to be quite honest.
Yes, and it's true. We know that any act of care puts you in the heart. So I know your periodontal service.
It's a very easy way to connect to people and as long as I stay out of my head and I stay and feel and I stay and I have my attention on my heart and feeling from it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like having an IV to a lifeline, you know.
Mm.
It's just like an IV of life-giving fluid.
So beautifully said, Pat.
That's what it seems like.
So beautifully said. And that's there for any one of us to tap into at any moment.
Absolutely.
Anything else you want to add to that, or does that feel like the complete picture for you? I mean, it's so full what you've given us, really.
I'd like to just, there were two things I wanted to touch on.
Yeah, please.
Here. Well, yesterday marked the 5th anniversary from the last day that I played golf.
Mm.
And I'm diligently working with a rolfer and a therapist to try and assist my balance so that I can hit balls again on my birthday, which is about 6 weeks from now.
Mm-hmm.
That's my goal. I don't need to hit them well. I just need to hit them and maintain a modicum of balance. Since I have dreamt about playing golf about three times a week over the last several years, this is literally a dream come true for me. One thing I promised myself, though, since I'm prone to perfectionism, this time around I'll be a lot easier on myself than I used to be. A good effort is all I ask. So, anyway, that's what I'm here to share with you, and this is that if you recognize and follow your heart, have appreciation for all that you have in your life, and realize that it's up to you to optimize your perspective, there is precious little that doesn't seem brighter and cheerier. What for me was a situation from which I saw only failure and defeat came one bred freedom and success. The great thing is that this attitude continues to positively affect other aspects of my life, for which I am eternally grateful.
Like how? How does it affect other aspects of your life?
Well, I just look at it in terms of my relationship with my wife, and I try and be as, you know, positive with her and, you know, try and, you know, feel as, because, you know, she gets down and depressed, and I, as best as I can, refuse to let her stay in that space by trying to just feel along with her and, you know, trying to help her out of whatever it is.
Mm.
And then, you know, people I come across, they look at me and you know, there's some people that I don't see this so much anymore, but I used to see when people, that's not true. I do see people, they look at someone in a wheelchair and they have pity. And to me personally, I would much rather be genuinely disliked than pitied. I mean, you know, that pity is the worst emotion you could possibly feel, being, you know, that toward you. It's like, look, I'm fine. Go pity somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, in our advanced course, we actually talk about pity in depth, right, as a form of over-caring.
Yeah.
That it doesn't really help you or the other person. It's like scrambled heart rhythm.
It's just like perfectionism.
It's just like, it's really a form of judgment,
mm-hmm.
right? And certainly, after hearing what you've shared, I don't think anyone on this call could feel pity for you, right? If anything, they're going to feel inspired by you.
And I feel the best I've ever felt in my whole life.
Yeah, I totally get that, right? And so this is that point, is that what looks like a negative situation through the eyes of physicality alone, when you add the dimensionality of the heart and you see it through the window of a soul's growth and a soul's journey, can take on an elegance and a beauty that you can actually appreciate rather than pity. And that applies to yourself, and it applies to how you see other people.
The great thing about it, too, is you tend to surround yourself with like-minded individuals. I find that some of the friends in my life now are some of the best people I've ever met in my whole life, and these are people I would not have gotten to meet otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been really just a tremendous blessing to be able to come across so many wonderful people, so many of which have become really, really good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And, helping each other and supporting each other. And like I said, I wouldn't trade problems with anyone. You know, everybody has their problems and, you know, like you were saying, things to deal with. So mine is no different. It's just something that's unique to me.
Right, and as you begin to access and tap into your heart, then the game is how those so-called problems or deficit situations can turn into assets for you. And we teach tools specific to be able to do that, and you've so clearly and beautifully done that here, Brett. You're a real inspiration and example for all of us.
That's my feet today.
In a moment, I want to open up the call so that people can ask you questions if they'd like. Are you good with that?
Sure.
Before we do, for those listening, I want you to turn your attention back to your piece of paper. Remember that thing where you wrote down what your own sense of impending failure is? And I want you to re-examine that in light of Brett's story, where he told himself for years that ending up in a wheelchair would doom him to imprisonment and failure. And instead, what it did was open up worlds for him. It gave him exercise back in his life. It gave him walks with his dogs and meeting his neighbors and socializing with other people and becoming connected to and a part of the world again. So I want you to look at this thing that your mind has defined as a failure and dare yourself to examine it from a different perspective. Dare yourself to examine it through the eyes of your own heart. Dare yourself to see it as something you could appreciate, as something of value, as a possibility for you. And we'll go ahead and open up the call for anyone who wants to share your own story or ask Brett a question or ask me a question. Just remember to unmute by pressing *6 again so that we can hear you. If nobody has any immediate questions, Brett, are you comfortable with giving out your email in case people would like to
sure, that's no problem at all.
Contact you directly? So you can just go ahead and read your email. Maybe.
Sure, it's askenas, askenas, at sbcglobal.net.
Great, and say it once more just for people
askenas,
to check it.
Askenas at sbcglobal.net.
Great, so A like Apple, S like Sam, K-E-N-A-S.
Yes, and if they would reference this particular webinar, then that would help me.
Yeah, in the subject line, maybe just put Heart Start Call so that he knows where you found him.
Mm-hmm. I have a question, Sheva.
Yeah,
are you done?
Nicole?
Yeah. You want me to go now?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess after you've had a breakthrough in your personal development with the using of the wheelchair. So how do you look back on all those other things, like say you didn't get the right meal at a restaurant? That's just one thing that comes to mind. But little stuff that we all typically, in a sense, stress out about. How do you look at those things now, and do you see, kind of in the past, that was wasted energy?
Oh, completely.
Maybe?
That's a really good question. In fact, I was thinking about this the other day. There's a friend of mine who I discussed many of these things with, and one of the things we discussed, and I've recognized, is that when something like that happens, like you use the example of getting a bad meal at a restaurant, you live it right at the moment, and you recognize and say, okay, what is it? What is the lesson that's teaching me right here? What is the take-home lesson? So anything that happens that's going badly, you just immediately turn it around and just make it into, okay, what can I learn from this? And it almost becomes a little bit of a game. So mm-hmm. if something doesn't go your way, you just start laughing about it and be like, okay, how's this going to turn around?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can do it in the moment, in feel, then you're really, you know, kind of ahead of the game, I think.
Beautiful.
And, you know,
yeah. I guess like you're saying, if you do it in the moment, but be honest about doing it. So you really have to be able to put yourself in a place of humor to deal with it rather than, like, because if you're trying to, like, okay, I'm going to try to appreciate this moment, but meanwhile you're, like, so angry in the moment, it's not going to come out as, you know, coherent.
You're right.
Right?
It's the whole thing about putting attention. If you put attention on your heart, then you're able to recognize it for what it is at that time, if you deliberately do that at the moment.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, because usually when it is when you're getting all upset about things like that, you're usually just completely wrapped up in your head. And your attention's on nothing but the problem instead of backing away from it and just saying, okay, let's get the big picture here.
Thanks.
Which, of course, having tools like neutral and quick coherence and the tools we teach in the beginner workshop really help you physiologically step back and get the bigger picture, because what Brett's saying and what Nicole is saying, it's not just a psychological thing that you fixate, right? That's literally what happens in the brain. You get tunnel vision. And it's part of our old survival intelligence that that happens. So we have to physiologically make a shift. That's why Brett keeps saying it was getting into the feeling that changed it. Because feelings change physiology, and that's what we teach people how to do. So that then as you get into the feeling of the heart, that changes the way the brain is working on the spot. So you can see the humor, you can see the bigger picture instead of being fixated. So I'm saying that because I want everyone listening to have self-compassion and compassion for others for the fact that we do fixate. It's not just like some stupid thing that makes us all ignorant. It's part of our survival intelligence, and we need to reprogram that in order to live in a heart-based way. That was a great question, Nicole. Thank you.
That was a great question.
Anybody else have anything for Brett? I so appreciate you joining us tonight, Brett. This has been fabulous. It makes
my
me want
pleasure.
To bring
you
back on.
Everyone else.
Please. Yeah, we're almost right at time as well. So what I will say is, if you've been listening to this as a recording or even live and you want more information about our classes, we have monthly classes you can participate in and a year-long program called Heart Mastery. And you can call us again at 310-581-1507, or you can email us info@Sierra, F like fantastic, YERA.com. These Heart Start calls happen every Monday from 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific time, and they're all recorded and archived on our website, so you can go and download them for free at www.fiera.com, F-Y-E-R-A, that's F like fantastic, YERA.com/heartstart.html. And you can listen to the archived recordings of the calls there. And this call will be posted. So if you enjoyed it and want to refer it on to a friend, you can. And you can sign up to receive weekly reminders with call-in information for these calls as well. Brett, anything else you want to offer the listeners in completion for tonight?
I just feel very grateful for the ability to be able to share my story and hope that, somebody can, use anything from this to, help themselves get to where they want to be.
That's great. Thank you so much for being here and for being here, for what the way that you've shown up inside of the challenge that you took on and met.
Well, thank you.
Really appreciate it. All right, everyone. We'll look forward to joining you again next week. Have a good night.
Thanks.